From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. And today, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Tom Dean. He's a family physician. Dr. Dean, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How long have you been a family physician?
Well, I finished my residency in 1975, so I guess that makes it 45 years.
45.
Sounds like a long time.
45 years. And where do you practice? Have you practiced in the same place that whole time?
The first 3 years I was in a practice in southeastern Kentucky, but then we moved back to where we are now in Washington Springs, South Dakota, which is a town of about 900 people in the middle of the east half of South Dakota. We've been there. My wife and I have been here ever since.
Ever since. So it sounds like, what, more than three decades out of that 45 years?
We moved back here in 1978.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
This is the community that I grew up in. So I grew up on a farm out west of town, and then I left for about 15 years, and then we came back in 78 and have been here since.
Wow. Okay. So almost the entire time you've been a doctor, a family physician. Then.
Yes.
So the pull of home was really strong. Tell us a little bit about the community, about where you grew up and about Wessington Springs.
Well, it's a small town, like I say, in the middle of the east half of the state. Totally, the economy is entirely agriculture. It has certainly changed over the years. My family's been here a long time. My great-grandfather actually homesteaded here in 1882, so the family has deep roots. But over the years that I've been here, we have actually lost population, mostly due to the changes in agriculture and the ag economy and the mechanization that has taken place in agriculture. There just aren't nearly as many jobs as there were when I was growing up. On the other hand, the community has been fairly progressive, I believe. We're doing a number of improvement activities and have maintained the basic services, but there are challenges because right now the ag economy has been stressed significantly by commodity prices and those things, but they're moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And are you the only family physician in town?
No, we have three doctors, two of us who live here and one who commutes from another community, so there are three of us, and I'm partially retired. So,
okay.
And then we have several nurse practitioners that work with us that help to carry the load.
Got it. Well, you know, I always thought that family physicians were a very particular breed of healthcare worker, right? Because you really are the first line. You see everything from the struggles of a little baby growing up to, you know, you might see those. Well, you've probably certainly seen those same people 40 years later as adult with all their adult challenges. I mean, what has it been like to be a family doctor there for so long?
Well, I would say it's been very rewarding.
Yeah.
You're right. We see multi-generations. It turns out my wife is a nurse midwife, and so she's seeing second and third generations of babies that she delivered a long time ago. Now our parents and even grandparents. And so it's rewarding. And I think also it really improves our ability to make good clinical decisions if we know something about the people and we know something about their values and the way they make decisions and those things. And I really think it helps us to make clinical decisions that are relevant to them and that are going to be hopefully more acceptable to them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the best family physicians know their whole patient, right, as a whole person and their whole family, too.
Yes. Yep.
And because, you know, healthcare isn't just like what prescriptions you're taking, right? It's your entire well-being. And so that's why just my hat's off to all the family doctors out there,
well, thank you.
Including you, Dr. Dean. So what's the biggest challenge you're seeing in your practice right now?
Well, we obviously are struggling with the COVID epidemic. It has fluctuated in this community. We got hit hard a couple of months ago, and then it calmed down, and then now our numbers are increasing again, and so it's a real worry.
Dr. Dean, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, keep going.
And so we have the usual ongoing challenges. Recruiting staff has always been a problem. It continues to be a problem, and it was particularly a problem during some of these outbreaks when all of a sudden, especially our nursing home was overwhelmed with an outbreak of COVID a few months ago, and had a great difficulty getting adequate staff because they're to take care of the residents that were sick. And so I'd say that's the biggest challenge.
So right now, as folks might know, South Dakota has one of the highest new case positivity rates in the country for COVID-19. Have you had any of the patients or the families that you work with get sick?
Oh yeah. In fact, my father, who was in the nursing home, died of COVID about a month ago. And so we've been directly affected, and and most of the folks that have died from the illness are people that either are direct patients of mine or people certainly that we know of. And so it's been a real both a challenge from a clinical point of view and a challenge from a personal point of view, and then trying to figure out what is the balance in the community between keeping things open so people have access to the basic services and still trying to prevent spread of the disease, which is a continuing threat.
Dr. Dean, I'm so sorry to hear about your father.
Well, thank you. He was 100 years old, so it was, not a total surprise, but he was fairly stable, and he was a bit confused. But then all of a sudden, when the virus hit, he went downhill rapidly and died within just a few days. Actually, our nursing home, I give them great credit. They, when we first began to encounter the virus back in March, probably, they closed down the facility, stopped allowing visitors, and did a lot of screening and a lot of testing. And for 6 months, they were able to keep the virus out of the facility. And then all of a sudden, it snuck in, and it just raised havoc. We had all of a sudden between a third and a half of the residents were positive, and then to make it even more difficult, a large portion of the staff got sick or had to be quarantined. And so the staff that was there was struggling with a group of frail elders who were sick, and they couldn't find staff to cover it. And so there was a few people that just worked heroically to put in many, many extra hours, and eventually they got through it, but it was devastating, and we did have a number of deaths in the nursing home, and it was a very, very difficult time.
And you said
it's kind of calmed down now, although it's been very difficult for the especially nursing home residents, because they've eliminated people able to eat in the dining room. Everyone's had to eat in their rooms, and so and all the group activities have been eliminated, and that's very difficult for people that are probably many of them a bit confused to begin with, and then sort of be isolated in their rooms is really awful. And yet, that really is the only safe way to do things. But it's been a real struggle.
And you said you also had patients who've gotten sick with COVID and some who've even died as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There were about, I believe, 10 deaths in this small nursing home. And then we've had a number in the community as well. So it's a real threat.
Now, Westington Springs, you said it's about 900 people in the community?
Yes.
So with a small community like that, whenever you have, 10 deaths in a nursing home, several in the community, out in the rest of the community as well. I imagine that in a small town like that, it hits really hard. That kind of loss.
Yes. Yeah, it is. But these communities have struggled before. Nothing. They've never encountered anything quite like this. But this is a group of basically independent, strong-willed folks, and they're moving forward.
What does that mean? They're moving forward.
Well, I guess I should say they're surviving. They're they're continuing to do their jobs as best they can, and keep hoping for a better day.
Have you seen anything like this in your 45 years as a physician?
No, I've never seen anything like this. We've been through tough times, and we've been through, flu outbreaks and so forth. But this is much worse. And partly is it just goes on and on. And I think one of the reasons we have a difficulty is that it'll kind of calm down, and we kind of assume that it's getting better, and then all of a sudden, with no warning, it flares up again. And so, happened in this community several times.
Well, Dr. Dean, hang on here for just one quick second. I want to hear more of that when we come back, because we are taking a look at the COVID pandemic in South Dakota today. We'll have more. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, we're taking a look at the COVID-19 pandemic in South Dakota. It has one of the highest new case positivity rates in the country right now. And we're getting a glimpse of what that's like on the ground in South Dakota with the help of Dr. Tom Dean. He's a family physician in Westington Springs, South Dakota. His family is from the area in the state going back many generations, and he's been practicing in Westington Springs for more than 40 years. And Dr. Dean, before the break, you were telling us about how there's been sort of like the pandemic has, I don't want to say come and gone necessarily, but there's been like little surges here and there, and then it pulls back in Westington Springs. Did I hear that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. We had an outbreak here in July, relatively small outbreak that was contained, and then in our clinic we had absolutely no positive tests for I think it was nearly 2 months, and then all of a sudden it hit again, and we don't have a good explanation as to why that happened, but we had one or two over a few days, and then all of a sudden, one day we had 11 positive tests, and 11's not a big number, but it's a huge number for us, and then it continued for several weeks, and as I mentioned, we had this really devastating outbreak that affected mostly the nursing home. And then that calmed down, and again, we had just a very low level of positive cases for most a big part of the month of October, and now the numbers are going up again.
Yeah.
And so it just is a very frustrating situation, because in much of this situation, we really don't know why did it flare up again. I mean, we have tried hard to convince people that wearing masks and those things is important. We've only been partially successful. There's still a fair number of people that are really reluctant to do that because they feel fine and they think it's an intrusion into their personal rights. So we keep struggling to try to convince folks that this affects us all. But I think people really are getting worn out. I mean, we hear about COVID fatigue, and we very definitely see that.
Mm. So, Dr. Dean, I have a couple of questions for you about sort of the community as a whole, and then maybe how you've been navigating this with some of your individual patients. But first, about the community. You know, you've described Wessington Springs as a place where you know, people are independent, strong-willed. They've dealt with adversity before. And I also hear you say that right now, perhaps there isn't as much mask wearing as you'd like to see. I mean, has there been a community-wide response to try and get a handle on the outbreak?
Well, yes. Early on, at one point, the city council did mandate a complete lockdown, and the grocery store, for instance, was not allowing anyone in the store. Everything was curbside service. They did a good job, but it was a hassle for them and for everybody else. And eating establishments were closed down. Then after a few weeks, we began to loosen up a little bit on that, and things sort of were stable with only just a few scattered cases. But now, like I said, we're seeing, I just checked with our clinic staff this morning, and we had a number of positives last week, an increase in the number of positives. So the virus is still around. And the problem with this virus is that it is silent, it's invisible, and you have every reason. I mean, logically, it seems like a person is fine, and then all of a sudden, the person, either that individual or somebody next to them, gets sick, and they can't identify where did they pick it up. Mm-hmm. So, and I think early on, at least, maybe not so much now, we really did kind of look upon this as a big city disease where people were crowded together. We have lots of wide open spaces, but it clearly affects us all. It's a disease that's everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me that in places like Wessington Springs, as you said, where people are automatically kind of naturally socially distant. Sorry, can't say that
yep.
word today. But you know what I mean, because you know you're living kind of far apart, et cetera. And given the history of the place, there is a very deep-rooted sense of independence, is the word that you used earlier, which I completely understand, right? Because people have to make do on their own a lot. And at the same time, these are exactly the kinds of communities that rally around each other very, very strongly in times of need, right? Because all you have is each other as well to get through really tough times. And both things are true in places like Wessington Springs. Is that a fair statement to make?
It is yeah. true, but the restrictions that go along with this pandemic have limited even the ability of neighbors to help out neighbors.
Uh-huh.
It has created even challenges that people haven't encountered before, I think.
So, do you think there's more that the community, that Wessington Springs should be doing right now? Or is there a kind of action that you think needs to come from the state level in South Dakota? What needs to be done to get a handle on this?
Well, I think each of us has a responsibility. In fact, I just last night wrote a column for our local paper, and I said, the way I think we need to look upon this, as for each one of us, is to assume that we could be spreading this virus. And everybody has to sacrifice a bit in this setting, because even one or two people that, you know, just don't want to be bothered by the nuisance of wearing a mask or these other precautions can be the source of more infection. And so we've got to convince folks that we are all in this together, and that the we can control this, but everybody has to participate, and we've not gotten there yet. And we've had some mixed messages from some of our leaders, and that sometimes is a problem. So we've still got some challenges.
Mixed messages is a polite way of putting it. I would say that Governor Kristi Noem has been pretty clear in her view that things like a mask mandate are an infringement of the liberties of South Dakotans.
Yes, that's true.
Is that a message that's helping?
From my perspective, no, that's not been helping.
So what would you like the governor to say or do instead that would help?
Well, I think we all have to make sacrifices. And in usual times, I would agree. If somebody told me I had to wear a mask because they wanted to cover up my ugly face, that I would balk at. I would not accept that. But this is different, and this is a threat to the whole community. And we have accepted, I use the example that, you know, we have said you can't drive down the highway at 100 miles an hour. And the guy says, well, if I kill myself, that's my problem. But it's not, that's not the issue. You're gonna kill somebody else along with it. And so we have accepted that there are some restrictions we put on individual behavior. And I think this, the mask wearing and social distancing and so forth, are things that at this point fit in that same category. We have to make some individual sacrifices if we're going to protect the whole community. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough message to sell, but I feel very strongly about it.
Well, Dr. Dean, if you can just hang on here for a second, I just want to play briefly some of the statements that Governor Noem has said over the past couple of months. For example, this is in October, as COVID cases in the state were rising rather precipitously. And Governor Kristi Noem told Fox News that she believes South Dakotans were happy about the government's response thus far to the virus.
They appreciated the fact that we didn't shut down their businesses. We allowed them to be flexible, take care of health and protect the public while still taking care of their customers.
And here's Governor Noem on ABC News' This Week earlier this month, sharing her view of the federal response to the pandemic.
I appreciated that President Trump gave us the flexibility to do the right thing in our state, and we'll continue to do that. He let me do my job.
So that's South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. And joining us now from Sioux Falls is Jackie Hendry. She's healthcare and education reporter for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
So you've been listening to Dr. Dean tell us what it's like in Wessington Springs. Can you give us a bigger, big picture view of the state of the pandemic right now in South Dakota?
Right. And I noted Dr. Dean said kind of this view in smaller communities that COVID is a big city disease. I think he really nailed it there. That was myself living in the big city of South Dakota here in Sioux Falls, just under 200,000 people. The view here is much different than in a place like Wessington Springs or more rural communities. But that urban-rural divide in this pandemic really has disappeared at this stage. there's really no corner of our state that is not seeing significant community spread of COVID-19 at this point. And unfortunately, just over the weekend, we have now crossed over. October was originally our deadliest month of the COVID-19 pandemic. And over this weekend, we have now surpassed that. November is now our deadliest month of the pandemic.
And what exactly is the positivity rate for new cases in the state now? I was seeing more than 40%. Do I have that right?
Well, on our Department of Health's website, we have our 14-day statewide positivity rate at about 20%.
Oh, okay.
The way that they're calculating that, though, is positive tests divided by total tests. Other states calculate that a little differently. Whereas here in Sioux Falls, the city website shows us that in Sioux Falls alone, our 14-day positivity rate is 59%. So as you can tell, it's still not a great situation here.
59% in Sioux Falls.
Yes. Yes.
That is, so just to be clear, that is the number of people who are testing positive, not for
right.
COVID-19.
Right. The weekly percent positivity rate is 59%.
So walk me through what some of the implications are of that number.
Most people will tell you that means we are not testing enough. The spread at this stage, I'm not sure what the exact guesses would be, but we're assuming that, or a lot of people are assuming that we are underdiagnosing COVID-19, maybe five times over. But the State Department of Health consistently points to they are by a wide margin exceeding their testing goals that they shared with the federal government early on in this pandemic. However, I know from personal experience, from the experiences of other people in my community, for the most part, if you're not symptomatic, you're going to have a harder time getting a COVID-19 test. That's shifting a little bit now as we are setting up some mass testing sites in about 10 different cities across the state. Sioux Falls is not one of those cities. You're able to fill out a survey, fill out a voucher, and then drive through a testing site regardless of symptoms. But in most situations up until now, you needed symptoms to get a test. And as we know, not everyone is going to have symptoms.
What impact is this having on the healthcare system in South Dakota, Jackie? Are the hospitals able to cope?
Short answer, barely. Healthcare workers are stretched thin. We had one of our chief medical officers of one of our major hospital systems, Avera, just a couple weeks ago, almost in tears, talking about the extreme impact this is having on healthcare workers. I've seen on Twitter some talking about being on their fifth 12-hour shift of the week, having to double up ICU beds in certain situations. And I've also reported, and we're seeing more instances of South Dakotans having to be transferred out of state to receive care just because the staffing and the capacity at local hospitals just isn't there for them.
So you heard Dr. Dean a little earlier talk about that, you know, in Wessington Springs earlier this year, they did essentially have a form of a lockdown, right? People couldn't even go into the grocery store to pick up their groceries. There was curbside delivery. Do South Dakotans feel like something akin to that is necessary again now? Or I'm trying to get a sense as to sort of really the complexity of views there in the state, given that these astonishing numbers that you're giving
right.
us, Jackie.
Right. And it's a fair point. Many South Dakotans were quicker to accept these efforts early on in the pandemic. But, you know, now that we're this late in, but seeing significant numbers, that will doesn't seem to be there. And I say that on part of having watched some local city council meetings. Sioux Falls recently did not pass a citywide mask mandate. And there have been discussions about concerns about putting even more restrictions on businesses that we had originally put in the early days of the pandemic. That political will isn't quite there. There's another ordinance coming up soon that would limit business capacities here in Sioux Falls, for instance. But I think a lot of it really has come down to the pandemic fatigue and this concern that, you know, a virus is going to be a virus no matter what we do. But if we listen to people who know what they're talking about when it comes to what healthcare systems need, we know what we need to do. A virus will still act like a virus, but we are not powerless to limit the damage.
Dr. Dean, we have just 30 seconds before we take another break. Do you want to respond to the things you're hearing Jackie say about people's views on what should or shouldn't be done to control the pandemic? Well, we'll see if we can get Dr. Dean back here in just a second. But Jackie, can you stand by for just another minute? Because you talked about that Sioux Falls public hearing, and I want to ask you a little bit more about that on the other side of the break. So hang on here for just a moment. We're talking about the pandemic in South Dakota today, one of the hardest hit states right now with COVID-19, and we'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the COVID-19 pandemic in South Dakota today. Very high positivity rate there for new cases in South Dakota. And I'm joined today by Dr. Tom Dean. He's a family physician in Wessington Springs, South Dakota. He's been practicing there for more than 40 years. His family also has really deep roots in South Dakota as well. Jackie Hendry is also with us from Sioux Falls. She's healthcare and education reporter for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. And we heard from a lot of South Dakotans in the process of preparing for this hour, On Point listeners. And here's some of what they told us when they called us to tell us what the pandemic is like right now in their state.
There are a lot of citizens in this state who are frustrated, scared, and feeling quite helpless because of the lack of leadership.
The only guidance that we got was, you know, be good, be clean, and take care of yourselves, because I'm not going to do anything to hinder the economy.
She welcomes crowds. She welcomes the Sturgis rally goers. She welcomes tourism.
Our state is suffering greatly as a result of her indifference.
It's really, really hard to see so many people out without masks.
She has stubbornly done terrible harm to our state.
So those are On Point listeners who listen on South Dakota Public Broadcasting in Rapid City, Spearfish, Yankton, DeSmet, just a couple of places. On Point listeners from South Dakota there. Obviously, their particularly passionate concern about the leadership of Governor Kristi Noem is not entirely shared across the state. So here is some sound of a Sioux Falls vote on a mask mandate last week, and the public was allowed to share their opinions on the issue. And here is resident Steve Johnson, who was part of nearly 3 hours of public comments.
What is the magic number of cases or deaths that triggers restrictions or liberty? Now, I've got two brothers that had COVID. They got sick. They survived. Their families, they didn't get anything. Why, I don't know. Instead of mask mandates, the let's do something, let's think about other alternatives to mandating mask wearing. Don't project your fear of COVID and your feelings on the rest of us.
So, Jackie Hendry, this was the public hearing you were talking about, right?
Yes, that's right.
So can you tell us more about the kinds of things that you learned from what people were saying there? I mean, because as you mentioned, the mask mandate did not go through in Sioux Falls.
Right. The mask mandate went down to a 4-4 tie among city council members. Mm-hmm. Our mayor, who does frequently remind people to wear masks, encourage mask wearing, ultimately gave the tie-breaking vote against the mandate, saying that he wouldn't ask the police force to enforce it. Enforcement was very difficult, and so on. Of the hours of public comments, in general, the people supporting the mandate either work in healthcare, have a loved one working in healthcare, and know that the systems are facing the overwhelming point, or they are themselves immunocompromised or a caregiver of someone who is immunocompromised. They've been doing the best they can to stay home, but they are also tired. They want to be able to feel safe when they go to the grocery store. Whereas the people against the mandate, as you heard with Mr. Johnson, it largely fell into this idea of personal liberty and not wanting the government to tell them what they need to be doing.
Dr. Dean, can I just turn back to you for a second? Because people across this country, including in South Dakota, very willingly and reasonably accept limits on their behavior that are mandated by the government, right? Like, most people won't drive on the opposite side of the road against traffic because it's against the law and it's unsafe, right? People are willing to go through the process to get hunting licenses and they won't hunt off season. There are lots of controls that are put on by the government that we accept as a society as reasonable for the common good. Can you tell us, I mean, through your eyes as a family physician who just knows people so well, what is it about the requested behaviors around controlling COVID that seem to be rubbing people the wrong way?
Well, I don't have a complete answer to that, but I think it has not been presented in as effective way as I would like to see. I think that my preference is that it should be presented that we really are all in this together, and that we all have to make small sacrifices in order for the safety of everybody to be improved or protected. And I don't, even those that reject the idea of masks, they do not want to be spreaders of the disease. Mm-hmm. And I think the point that I've tried to make is that so many of the patients that I see have no idea where they got the infection. And so it means that we have people in the community who are asymptomatic, who are spreading the virus, and none of us know whether we could be one of those people. And I think we need to communicate that approach, that any one of us could be spreading this disease without knowing it. And because of that, we all need to make some minor sacrifices. I even go back to as far back as World War II, when people were asked to make major sacrifices because the country was stressed with the demands of the war, and people did that. I'm sure they didn't like it, but they did it, and I think we're in a similar situation.
Well, Jackie, I want to ask you just quickly. In North Dakota, just a couple of days ago, the governor there issued an executive order on Friday requiring mask wearing. So it's just happened just to the north of you. Could that sort of change the trajectory of the decision making in South Dakota at all?
I highly doubt it. Okay. I do not expect any statewide mandate here. That any mandates would have to come at the city level.
Okay. And so, by the way, that North Dakota executive order on Friday also included face coverings in all indoor businesses and public settings where physical distancing isn't possible. And it remains through effect in North Dakota at least through December 13th. So I want to bring Nick Wendell into the conversation now. He joins us from Brookings, South Dakota. He's Brookings City Council member and South Dakota Board of Technical Education Executive Director as well. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Meghna.
So can you give me your take on sort of where South Dakota is with the pandemic and what, if anything, you'd like to be done to get a handle on it?
Well, I think some of what Dr. Dean and Jackie mentioned is right on. You know, we've seen some peaks and valleys in terms of the virus spreading in our communities and in our state, but we are certainly at a peak right now. And it seems that we're going to be in for a rough couple of weeks this fall and winter and beyond. And so I just continue to reinforce this message that as individuals, we have to do more. If you've been on the fence about wearing a mask, you got to wear a mask when you're in a public space, when you're indoors. If you can stay home or you can socially distance, do that whenever you can. I think those individual decisions, even if you're not showing any symptoms, even if you don't have any known exposure, are the only thing we can do right now to help slow the spread of the virus in our communities.
And how is that message being received?
I will say in our community, I can speak for Brookings, I do think that it's been normalized. It's really become a culture of mask wearing in mm-hmm. Brookings. And in part, that's because we did take decisive action weeks ago to enforce a citywide mask mandate. And certainly there was opposition early on, and there still is some opposition. There's not unanimous consent, as there would not be to most measures. But I would say the overwhelming majority of folks in our community have really embraced this idea that we should be wearing masks wherever we go.
So it can be normalized, and that's great. And has it had an effect, a positive effect on what you're seeing in terms of new infections in Brookings?
I believe that it has. I think some of the data would tell us that it has. It does not mean that we don't have an issue in Brookings. You know, our realistic goal was never to bring the number of positive cases down to zero.
Right.
But if we could limit the number of cases that would turn into hospitalizations and ultimately some of them turning into deaths, that was the goal. You know, Brookings is the fourth largest city in South Dakota. We're also home to the state's largest public university, the second most manufacturing sector workers in the state. So we have lots of characteristics demographically that might put us at risk. But among the counties that have the 10 most populated cities in the state of South Dakota, right now we have the fewest positive cases per capita. Now you can't point all of that back to mask wearing, mm-hmm. but you know we have a mask mandate. We have an ordinance that limits the capacity in our bars and restaurants and beauty salons to less than 50%. We've really tried to take a multi-pronged approach, and I do think it's having a positive impact on slowing the spread of the virus in our community.
Right. So Dr. Dean, let me turn back to you here, because I really think that everything that all of you have been talking about, it's about, you know, connecting with people. Like you said, Dr. Dean, no one wants to go around and be the person who's spreading a deadly virus to other members of their community. But there's sort of a gap that I think family physicians all have to sort of dwell in a lot in terms when it comes to convincing people about changing their behavior in a way that's good for their health. So if you just hang in here with me for just a second here, I want all of you to listen to something for a moment, because on Saturday night, a South Dakota emergency room nurse named Jody Doring, she had a night off from the hospital and she took to Twitter and put out this short Twitter thread that went viral almost instantaneously. And in that Twitter thread, she wrote, "I can't help but to think about the COVID patients that she'd seen in the last few days." She wrote, "The ones who don't believe the virus is real, the ones who scream at you for a magic medicine and that Joe Biden is going to ruin the USA, all while gasping for breath on 100% Vapotherm." And then she wrote, "Then they stop yelling at you when they get intubated." So she was on CNN this morning and she said this.
Their last dying words are, "This can't be happening, it's not real." And when they should be spending time FaceTiming their families, they're filled with anger and hatred. And it just made me really sad the other night. And I just can't believe that those are going to be their last thoughts and words.
Dr. Dean, have you encountered anyone who simply does not believe that it's real?
not quite as directly as that report, but certainly we have encountered people that just don't think it's all that big a deal, and I think that it's that. And see, people, they said, well, I know so-and-so had it, and he didn't feel good for a couple of days, and then he's fine. And that is true for many people that get this disease. But on the other hand, in our little small county, we've had 13 deaths, and that's a big percentage for a small population. So I've used the example that with Ebola, for instance, is anybody that got it immediately, we knew they were sick, and about half of them died. But this disease is so variable, and it just fluctuates up and down, and that's what everybody can come up with an example to defend whatever position they want to take, yeah. and that's what makes it difficult.
Well, in your 40-plus years of being a family physician, when you've had to try and counsel people to change their behavior in a way that would be good for their health, how have you done that? What messages do you find works?
Well, I have yet to find the message that always works. I think that as the gentleman from Brookings said, we are seeing gradually increasing acceptance of the idea that masks are important. I think we just need to keep saying the same thing. And most recently, like I said, I wrote a column for our paper last night, and I said that we need to think about this not as something that's being forced on us by some evil government, that we are all in this together, and we all need to be part of this, because we might be the ones that are spreading this virus and not even know it. And I would hope that would help. The other approach that I think probably we've failed on is we've sort of had an either-or. Either we open the economy or we shut down the economy and restrict the virus. I really think there are compromises that are available but we've got to talk to each other. And, of course, throughout our political experience of the last few months, that's become more difficult. So,
yeah. Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap up this conversation about South Dakota. But I am so grateful to all three of you for giving us an accurate view of what's happening in the state here, because the headlines don't really capture the complexity of the moment in any particular place. So, Dr. Tom Dean in Wessington Springs, South Dakota, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
And Nick Wendell, Brookings City Council member from Brookings, South Dakota. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nick.
Thanks, Magna.
And Jackie Hendry, healthcare and education reporter for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, with us from Sioux Falls. Jackie, thank you so much for giving us the big picture on what's happening in the state.
Thank you, Magna. Thank you for sharing our story.
All right. So that's one view, or a view, of what's happening in South Dakota. We'll be keeping up with that story, of course, in the weeks and months to come. But before we wrap up today, I wanted to just take a second to give a shout out to our new listeners in Southern California, because today, On Point joins the lineup at KPCC, Southern California Public Radio, and we are thrilled to be with you, to connect with Greater Los Angeles, Orange County, and beyond. So hello, Southern California, and welcome to the On Point family. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.